It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Phil, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm good. The sun's shining at the moment.
It is just quite nice, isn't it?
View over Rangitoto.
Lovely.
But I also see a big bank of black clouds.
We can just enjoy the sunshine while we've got it, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's winter.
Live for the moment.
Exactly. Hey, we've got a lot to talk about this morning. Shall we start with talking a bit about climate change? Because that is obviously the big topic at the moment, and it will continue to be the big topic for a while as well, until we sort it out, basically. But there's been a bit of conversation about how Auckland Council is dealing with climate crisis, and also what it is that we can see as tangible steps that the council's taking, because there's been a bit of criticism that there is not necessarily a concrete plan by the council, because it's been reduced down to just sort of a framework idea. So what can we be expecting as Aucklanders from our council? What are you guys doing as tangible steps towards solving climate change?
Well, I think you can expect from council an acknowledgement, and it will happen today, that we're not just talking about climate change. I was reading a Guardian article the other day which says it's now not using climate change because that's just a passive and not accurate phrase. They're going to talk about a climate crisis or a climate emergency or breakdown. And the scientists are actually telling us that what we're really talking about is a future catastrophe for humanity. So today, the question of whether we have whether we declare a climate change emergency will come before council. And it won't be an emergency like, in the Civil Defence and Emergency Act. It's not a tsunami where we're having to deal with the instant effect of an absolute disaster. But we're talking about what we can do to prevent and to adapt to a coming disaster, which is going to affect the lives of our kids and our grandkids. We've also put up a climate change, climate action framework, which will be discussed by councillors today, which sets out 11 areas where we need to act. Now, obviously, there are areas that are within the control of council, and there are areas that are nationally controlled, and we will be an advocate on things like the Carbon Zero Bill. And there are areas where we need international action, and it doesn't help to have people like President Trump that still denies the crisis there. But you'll see a number of things from council. For the first time in our long-term plan, we put $40 million aside for climate change and $90 million aside for dealing with coastal management, because those are the areas that will be first impacted. Mm. But that sum of money won't be enough, and we'll have to do a whole lot more. And I'm imagining for our next 10-year budget, we're going to consult with the people of Auckland over precisely the things that we need to do. And it will be around things like transport, where we're trying to make sure, first of all, we have a more compact city, and secondly, that we are using public transport, and thirdly, that public transport increasingly becomes sustainable in terms of its fuel use. So we've got electric trains, but not yet enough electric buses.
Yeah.
It'll be about, making sure that our homes are fit for purpose, properly insulated. I've moved on to an electric car myself. One of the first things I did as a mayor. This year I'll be converting my house to having solar panels.
Well, that's lovely, Phil, but it's a very expensive thing for a lot of people to be able to afford to do on their own. So I guess this idea of having some infrastructure that is more accessible for people is a useful thing, and it's good to see that there is some changes coming in that too. But if we could just go back to this idea of climate emergency a little bit and what's being debated today, I think this is quite interesting because it's also been debated a lot about whether we should be thinking about this in terms of an emergency, because that sometimes, I mean, obviously we are in a crisis, a climate crisis, but sometimes the term emergency can lead to, I guess, a way of framing an issue that can be quite problematic, in the sense that it can lead to more of a kind of authoritarian way of approaching an issue that doesn't necessarily allow for the kind of long, thoughtful processes we need to be engaging in to solve and deal with something like a climate crisis.
Yeah.
How are you going to make sure that, irregardless of what happens today, the public is still able to be very much involved in the way that Auckland deals with this going forward?
Well, the first thing is that the climate action framework that that the council is looking at today will go out for public consultation. I'd actually like to see it out there for a lot longer. I think it's going out for 4 weeks. My view is that that's not enough. We need to do it thoroughly. It's not a case of being authoritarian, but it is a case of acting with urgency. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is an international group of respected climate change scientists, say that we've got about 12 years to turn greenhouse gas emissions around. If we're to achieve the target that all the countries in the world agreed to in Paris for a 1.5 degree, no more than 1.5 degree increase in temperatures. So we need, you know, why an emergency? I'm in one sense a bit reluctant to use that language. I use my language carefully, but I think it is an emergency because if we don't act now, then the costs of acting later will be much greater, and by then the devastating effects of climate change will be really hurting us both economically and environmentally. So, you know, yeah, you've got to carry your community with you. We're a democracy. If you don't carry your community with you, you don't have a position of leadership for very long. But do we have to show leadership in this and say, actually, we've got to change the way that we are living? That's why we need a more compact city. That's why we're looking at more intensive housing. That's why we're looking at mode change to use public transport and active forms of transportation like walkways and cycleways. All of those things need to happen now, because if we wait 12 years, we've waited too long.
How do we ensure that that development is sustainable? Because obviously we are an expanding city, and as you were saying, we have to be thinking very carefully about how we move forward, because there are a lot of people to fit in here. There's a lot of stuff that we need to make sure functions as a city. We have to have, you know, good transport, things like that. But how do we do that sustainably? How do we make sure that we are developing sustainably as a city?
Yeah, well, I mean, why I focus partly on transport is because that's 40% of our global emissions. So we've got to start tackling that, and having, you know, you mentioned before about affordability, and I accept that question. You know, it does cost more for us to buy an electric bus than a diesel bus. It costs the individual more to buy an electric car than the equivalent powered carbon car. But. You know, what we need to be looking at, for example, you know, what really frightens me is that for every electric car we're importing at the moment, we're importing 65 SUV diesel cars, and they're going to be on the road for 21 years. So, you know, we've got to go and say to government, we need to put incentives in place so we don't have 1% of our fleet that's electric. We look at Norway, where they've got 44% of their fleet that is electric. Mm. The more corporates we can get converting their fleets, the more there'll be a second-hand car market for electric cars in 3 or 4 years' time. So, you know, encouraging the corporates to do the right thing. You know, those are the practical things that we can do on the ground now. But even now, you know, you buy an electric car, you might be paying, you know, $8,000 or $9,000 more for it, but that car will pay for itself quite quickly because, one, you're not paying road user charges as diesel cars are, and secondly, you know, as the price of petrol, and it's still going up, you know, you're saving it because the fuel that you're using is not only environmentally friendly, but it's also cheap fuel compared to carbon fuel.
If I could just interrupt you, sorry, for a moment, okay, to just sort of move on to another kind of transport issue as well while we're on that topic, is some of the stuff that's been happening on Waiheke Island. They've had issues with their ferries. There's also, I mean, a bit going on in the council at the moment about trying to encourage people into using public transport. You have on the 23rd of June, I believe, a free public transport day.
Yep.
So that's great that there are these initiatives to encourage people to use public transport. But that free public transport day, I mean, you could argue it's on a Sunday. It's not necessarily a day that people urgently need to get places, unless you work on a Sunday, of course. How are we going to actually sustainably be able to get people onto transport, onto public transport, when they've got issues with ferries not running on time?
Yeah.
I know that that's not necessarily a council company, but it's part of the infrastructure of our city.
Let's deal with it in two parts. First, the overall public transport thing. Last week, we celebrated the 100 millionth trip on public transport in the space of a year. And we've not seen that in Auckland since the days of trams back in, you know, 1951. So what we are getting is we are getting mode change to public transport. In fact, the increase in use of public transport in our city is the third highest in the world. So we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit for that. And what the Free Public Transport Day is to do is, one, to say thank you, Aucklanders, for making that decision. This is a way of marking that 100 millionth trip. But it's also a way to encourage, albeit on a Sunday, people who've never travelled on public transport to give it a go. Because once you've travelled on it, hey, it's not scary, it's pretty convenient, it's pretty comfortable, takes all the stress out of getting to work. You don't have to drive through the traffic, you don't have to look out to avoid having an accident, you don't have to find a parking place. So, you know, that's simply a way, it's almost a marketing tool to say, give it a go and you'll quite like it.
Right, but how do we ensure that the transport options that people have are going to continue to be functioning at a way that's going to be useful for people to use?
Well, that's where in the last 10-year budget, which was last year, we put $28 billion into new transport networks with a focus in particular on public transport and walkways and cycleways. I want to come back to your ferry too, because I don't want that to fall off the edge. With the fuller ferries, they are exempt from any control by local authorities. Stephen Joyce passed an order in council back in, I think, 2011, I think it was, to say we have no control over them. And it is a worry when there were 18 cancellations and a lot of delays in travel on the ferries. If you're living on Waiheke, you have only one way to get home or get to work, and that's by ferry. And they were particularly frustrated when, because of staff shortages with Fullers, the Fullers ferry was leaving with a queue of people still waiting on the wharf and empty seats on board because they have safety restrictions on so many passengers per members of crew. So the first thing we've done is, you know, I've had a meeting, and I've got another meeting coming up with Mike Horn, who's the CEO, saying you've got to do better than this. And to be fair to him, he called the public meeting in Waiheke and, you know, 250, 300 people turned up there. But secondly, I've also written with Councillor Chris Darby a letter to the Minister saying that Fullers ought not to be exempt from our oversight as to the standards of the service they're providing, and asking for the Minister to make a change in that law. So we're tackling it from both ends, directly with Fullers, saying, hey, improve your, get your act together here. These people deserve a better deal than what they're getting at the moment. But secondly, to try to give us some control over the quality of the service by removing that exemption status.
All right. Well, that's great. I'm sure we'll probably come back to both of these topics in due course, because they're both quite big and ongoing conversations. But thank you so much for your time this morning, Phil.
Good to talk, as always, Rachel. You take care.
Cheers.
Today.
You too. Enjoy the brief window of sun we've got.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.